Until 11, you're listening to Mitchell Dye with Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Toby Hagen from Wheels Magazine will join us in a moment, and one of the things I want to ask him about is the Volkswagen situation and if we're actually making any progress on the emissions scandal. And he's now on the line, Toby Hagen from Wheels Magazine, our motoring correspondent. Good morning.
Mitchell, good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Very well indeed. Now, you were in America a week and a half ago. We were actually speaking to you while you were over in LA. And what did you see coming out of that motor show over there?
Yeah, well, pretty strong show. The LA show is one that's been certainly building up in recent years. We've seen some more significant model reveals. One of the big ones from almost 2 weeks ago now was the new Fiat 124, which is effectively an MX-5 in an Italian suit. Underneath, it's pure MX-5, so it's the same basic structure and so on underneath. It actually uses its own engine, but and its own design on top. But you look inside it, for example, almost exactly the same as the MX-5. It's built in the same factory, so it actually comes out of a Japanese factory, even though it's got its Italian design and so on top.
So people might just be buying it for that Italian design, which they love so much.
Pretty much, yeah, although I'm not entirely convinced about the look of it. It's, the MX-5 is sort of fairly svelte-looking and, a traditional sort of look. The Fiat 124 has got big bug eyes on it, and it's, for me, it doesn't quite work as well in terms of the small roadster design, but maybe I'll get used to it.
Yeah, I'm just seeing some pictures of it now, and you never know, it might take off. Sometimes you've got to sort of shake up what is the norm, don't you, to get a bit of traction?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, that segment as well is very much as it's about design, it's also very much about how the cars drive. You know, it is all about the driver and about enjoying getting there rather than just being pampered along the way. So from that perspective, who knows, they might have nailed it.
And while you were there, you were driving the prototype for the new Mazda CX-9. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. So this was one of these cars that you see that sort of looks like a zebra. It's got black and white stripes all over it, all to try and fool people with cameras and not exactly give away the look of it. So we got to go for a bit of a drive in that. Big departure for the CX-9. This is the second generation CX-9, due on sale in Australia in mid-2016. It's gone from a V6 engine down to a four-cylinder turbo and actually gone backwards on power. So they've dropped about 17% of the power that they had previously, but they've got a lot more torque in it. So it's all about sort of low rev drivability if you're sort of going around the suburbs. Getting some... To a lot of people, it will actually feel like it's got more power because it's all power when you're only sort of a third or a half the way into the throttle. So it's a different experience and one that they're saying brings some big fuel economy benefits.
Well, is that what's going to be the main selling point? I mean, how does it compare when you've got your four-cylinder turbo versus a V6 in terms of fuel consumption? Will people really notice the difference at the bowser?
Yeah, look, they're saying it's about 20% more efficient than before, and certainly one of the complaints with the current CX-9 is how much fuel it uses, and that segment generally, the six-cylinder engines in there tend to be fairly thirsty, whether it's Ford Territory or Kia Sorento, those sorts of cars can all use a fair bit of fuel. So it's so they're saying, as I said, 20% improvement. So it's a decent step down. Still won't be, it's not going to use the same amount of fuel as a small car or anything like that, but it'll be a big step down on where it's been.
And is it designed really to go off-road, or is it just more for sort of going around the suburbs?
Nah, pretty much on-road. So they actually do. A lot of them will only be two-wheel drive, front-wheel drive vehicles. They do a four-wheel drive system as well, but very much designed for on-road driving. The off-road stuff would be limited to some pretty light dirt tracks and things like snow. So obviously this car is largely built for America, where they'll use it in the northern states, in particular in icy or snowy areas at sort of this time of year up there.
And those four-wheel drive type vehicles, they're actually only two-wheel drive, are they sort of the main go-to vehicle for people that are families and just want to get the whole family and all the stuff into the car and go away somewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. So that they're a massively common thing for that at the moment. Easy to chuck the kids into, and significantly, they've got a higher seat height, so it makes it easier for adults to strap the kids into. And then when you're putting things like push bikes and so on in the back, you've got pretty flexible seating options. So there's a whole range of reasons there why they work for people. Typically they're selling to people with two or three kids, so they may not always use that third row of seats that takes capacity to seven, but it's there if they need it. And when they're picking up friends and so on, they can easily fit them in.
Now, what's this 140k ute? The 140k ute that's gone on sale in Australia? Yeah.
Well, 140 grand for, it's the most expensive ute in the country for a Ram, or a Dodge Ram, basically. So it's got a 6.7 litre turbo diesel engine with heaps of grunt. It can tow up to 7 tonnes, which is enormous. So it's a massive towing capacity, and one of these huge made for America trucks. So they sell extremely well over in the States, where they're used by all manner of people, particularly in the Midwest and places like that, Texas, which absolutely loves them. Over here, much smaller market, but the people who buy them absolutely love them. They tend to either tow things like double horse floats or maybe a big caravan, or they're grey nomads getting around Australia. So this company's saying that they need to sell at least pretty much 500 a year. The interesting thing is these sorts of vehicles have been available in Australia before from a lot of different local converters. The converter doing this one's actually the same, effectively the same company that does HSVs in Australia. So it's based in Melbourne, the outer suburbs of Melbourne. Mm. They're converting it, and they've got an agreement with the factory, so they get the cars out of the factory and they actually go back to the suppliers that create the parts in the US, so the suppliers for the original vehicle, and get them to produce some components for right-hand drive. So they're saying it's a much better conversion than all those other ones that are on the market now.
You see a lot of those sorts of utes on those American TV programs that are centred around those areas like the Midwest, but I'm not sure if you really see them driving around the streets here, so I think that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, well, look, and they certainly will feel out of place in the CBDs of Melbourne or Sydney or something like that. They are enormous. And for most people, don't make sense. But as I said, for the few people, the much smaller percentage of people in Australia who absolutely find a need for towing or lugging something that heavy, they will be a useful device, albeit an expensive one.
And when you spend that 140K, is that the main thing you're buying, the towing capacity, or does it come with technological advances in the cabin and leather seats and all of those luxuries?
Yeah, look, not so much technological advances, but certainly what they've done for these cars they're bringing to Australia is they've gone for a higher level of specification, so things like leather trim and so on. So they've gone for all the fancy gear inside to, help offset some of that shock that might be, or some people might feel, in paying that much for a ute. So so you are getting a fair bit of your money. But look, the main reason you buy one of these things is for towing, or the amount you can put in the back of the tray. It's, they're big vehicles with big load capacity.
Now, Volkswagen, and we've talked a lot about the emissions scandal. What's the latest in that?
Well, they came out last week and say that they have a planned fix for their emissions cheating vehicles. So basically what they're saying for the 2-litre engines, which is the vast majority of the 99,000 cars in Australia that are impacted by this, they're saying for those it's just a software change, so they need to have people back for about half an hour into a dealership to update the software. Now, that's they're not going to start until at the earliest January next year, so we've still got a couple of months before they kick off. And they're saying it'll take months to roll through those 99,000 cars to make sure they can all get done. But, it sort of begs the question as to if it was that simple, if it was just software, why didn't they do it the first time round? But obviously, maybe the technology wasn't there and so on for them to do that. For the 1.6-litre engines, which is far fewer cars, things like the Volkswagen Polo and so on, they have to actually add a little component as well, which basically changes the airflow into the engine. The airflow sensor gives it a more accurate reading and therefore can more efficiently get the emissions under control. So it's there's a few different fixes there. That one they're saying for the 1.6-litre engines will be later next year until they get onto that. So again, we're looking at probably the best part of a year or more until all the vehicles are actually completed.
If they do a software update and someone goes in and gets that done and they get their car back, will they notice much of a difference when it comes to driving it? Will there be less power or anything like that?
Well, look, at the moment they're saying no. They haven't 100% come out and said there will be no difference. But they're saying their target and their early testing suggests that there will be no drop in performance. and no increase in fuel consumption, which is pretty amazing if they can get away with that. But that's what they're saying at the moment.
I don't really understand how you can have the same performance, same fuel consumption, but fewer emissions just from a change in software. I must be missing something.
Yeah, I think there's a few people thinking exactly that, Mitchell, in terms of exactly what I said. Why didn't they do this in the first place? Why didn't they just get that right? But certainly the expectations were that it would compromise something, even if it wasn't peak power or something like that, and maybe drivability elsewhere in the rev range. But look, at the moment, it's a bit of a wait and see. We've got to wait and see if they can deliver the goods. And if they can, well, everyone's, owners, so those 99,000 owners will be happy that they're not significantly impacted.
And we've seen a few recalls this week, haven't we?
We've seen a number, yes, and some big brands too. So this is, Mercedes-Benz, for example, with its S63, which is the one of the flagships of its range, almost $500,000. So that one had some issues. Maserati with potential issues with doors that could pop open in a crash. Rolls-Royce with some airbags not going off. Mitsubishi with some, just an incorrect sticker on the tow bar. If you got the optional tow bar, they have to change the sticker on it. But one of the more interesting ones is for this electric car startup Tesla, the Californian-based brand, which is bringing all its cars back worldwide, including those sold in Australia. We think there's about 500 cars in Australia affected, and they're saying there's an issue with the seatbelt. So obviously a fairly major safety issue if the seatbelt's not working, so that's something that that may not work.
So quite a big variation in all those recalls, some very serious issues right down to trivial matters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing with recalls. We've seen them in the past, only a few months ago, where it's just been a page in the owner's manual. So there's actually been nothing wrong with the car, but they've just incorrectly stated something in the owner's manual, so they had to update that. So, yeah, you can get massive differences in the significance and I guess the change or how much of a fix there is involved with the recall, and this week's been a good example of that.
I mean, that Tesla situation is interesting because I was talking to someone who's got a bit of money to spend, and they are quite technologically savvy, and they just look at that sort of car as being the future, and they're really keen on getting the Tesla. They sort of see it as almost the gold standard of car in their eyes. So I suppose it's interesting that there's been a worldwide recall.
Yeah, absolutely, and you're dead right. There's a lot of people out there who do hold it up as the pinnacle, and hey, this is where the car industry should be going. One thing they perhaps overlook ever so slightly is that Tesla is currently not making a profit, so that's a fairly important part of the long-term viability of a car company, is that they do have to make a profit. Tesla's not there yet. They've had some enormous startup costs, obviously, and bringing to market what is some pretty out-there technology, or technology that hasn't been put into the market like they're doing it at the moment. But, an amazing brand that's got amazing brand recognition for a car company selling so few cars.
That's it. Well, Toby, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again in a fortnight.
Sounds great. Thanks, Mitchell.
Thank you very much, Toby Hagen there from Wheels Magazine, our program motoring correspondent, talking about the latest developments in the motoring world.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.